So can I welcome the Chief Executive of Liverpool City Council, Tony Reeves, into the Downtown Den. Tony, been in post for over a year now. Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah, no, two years.
2 years, beginning of August, yeah.
Wow, bloody hell. Well, do you know what? I didn't realise we'd have to suffer you that. Sorry, but we'd have to work alongside you in such a positive fashion for so long. And listen, Tony, I know how busy you are at the moment, and it's been great to be able to actually engage with you over the past few weeks and be part of the thinking in terms of how the city is handling the current crisis, and more importantly, perhaps in some respects, how we're going to recover. But before we move on to the economics and to the business challenges that obviously many in the audience today will want to talk about, I just wanted to really focus a little on the local authorities' challenge and the City Council's difficulties, because you know we can have all the brickbats in terms of the politicians having a go at budgets and cuts and all that sort of thing. But when you consider how quickly the local authority, Liverpool City Council, has had to react to this situation on all sorts of levels, so from care packages to the welfare of its own staff, right through then to being given responsibility of getting grants through the door for businesses, it's been, you know, let me say this on behalf of the business community, an absolutely heroic effort on your part. And I really do congratulate Liverpool, the City Council, yourself and your team in what you've been doing over the last few weeks, mate. I've been tremendously impressed.
Thank you. Do you want me to set out what we've been doing a little bit, or?
Yeah, please. If you could just talk about, you know, what those challenges have looked at, because look like, because in the early stages, you know, you didn't know what was coming down the track. So what planning was able to take place, and how much has had to be reactionary?
Okay, so with our colleagues at Merseyside Resilience Force, all the blue light services, the other local authorities, first responders, we do a lot of emergency planning practice, and we've got sort of plans for a whole host of things. Normally, things like floods. We had a flu pandemic plan, which we started off with this, and from a council perspective, we had to look at this from a business continuity point of view, working out which of our key functions we needed to keep going, which we needed to close down in order to redirect resources for the things that we needed to do. And we quickly took that flu pandemic plan and turned it into a COVID-19 plan, because it is different. And we did that within the first week or so. We put ourselves on a war footing. We put in place emergency powers to make decisions, because we weren't holding council meetings like cabinet meetings, etc. And we looked at from every angle what we needed to do and what the council role would be in this crisis. And that ranges from getting food packages out to vulnerable people who are shielding. Obviously, there's a national effort there. That national effort was a bit slow getting off the ground as we anticipated. So we put the logistics in place to be able to do that. And then there's other vulnerable people that weren't on the national list. And put that into context, we've delivered 5,000 food parcels to people who were, you know, the most vulnerable in Liverpool over this period and kept them going. Obviously, PPE, everybody's heard a lot about that. For frontline staff, particularly for care home staff, we've had to manage supply chains of that. We've done that at the Merseyside level. The national system that was supposed to kick in 6th of April still hasn't materialised. So our procurement officers have been working round the clock, buying hundreds of thousands of face masks, gloves, aprons, etc. to protect people. We have the public health function, so there's a lot of work to do there in terms of testing and in terms of the intelligence about what was happening in the pandemic, what the trends were, how we compared with the national average, which I'll probably come on to in a bit. All the logistics of closing down the schools, but then keeping a number of schools open, including right through the Easter holidays, because of the key workers in the NHS and elsewhere, so we could keep those people at work by looking after their children, and that's gone brilliantly. Things like free school meals, vouchers for children who rely on free school meals quite often to get their main meal during the day. So there's a whole host of things we've had to do differently, but we closed down a load of functions in order to redirect staff, I have to say the council staff, 90-odd percent of whom are Scousers, have just been absolutely brilliant, quite frankly. Couldn't wish for a better bunch of people. I've not heard a single grumble. Everybody stepped up to the plate. People have volunteered for all sorts of things, you know, way outside their comfort zones, and done that. We set up a strategic command team that meets on a daily basis that I chair. And we've got tactical groups for various operational aspects of the response. All of that infrastructure is put in place really, really quickly, briefing politicians in different ways, managing the political interface so we can get on with the job, quite frankly, is really, really important. And of course, you're working with MPs, mayors, metro mayors, city mayor, councillors, all of whom are sat at home with plenty of time to contemplate and generate ideas that have got the potential to blow our plan off course. So managing that is quite a careful task, and hopefully we've quickly adapted to that and shaped some of the political thinking. So, and of course, we've contributed significantly at a Merseyside level. So we lead the social care cell at a Merseyside level. We've got a heavy role to play in the what's called the excess death cell, managing for, you know, the level of fatalities well above normal, where you've got to think about mortuary facilities and stuff like that. You know, a lot of really, really tough stuff. And I personally lead the overall recovery plan. There's initially it's a response plan at the Merseyside level, but we're now quickly transitioning into recovery, and I'm leading that work. And as you know, Frank, there's been a lot of business engagement over the last few weeks, and we've been working for the last 4 weeks on an economic recovery plan for the city, which we called Operation Greyhound. Not a great title. I came up with it as a joke, and it seems to have stuck. This is about trying to get the city out of the traps as quickly as possible afterwards. And we're working with a firm called Metro Dynamics, who are probably the best in the business at this sort of thing, and they're working closely with us. We're already engaging senior civil servants from various departments in that work, and there's extensive business engagement taking place as well. We're absolutely determined that Liverpool really gets going as quickly as possible. We know this is, you know, the economic shock is significant. We want to get the big schemes in the city centre moving. We want to give investors confidence that we're doing the right things. And we want to demonstrate to government that in return for some funding to pump prime that effort, Liverpool can really deliver on a national and international scale for the UK. I think it's really, really important we show that leadership as a city. So there's a range of other things, but perhaps as a summary, that's the sort of thing we've been doing to respond to the crisis. And now, my job's easy in this. It's actually the frontline staff who've been absolutely magnificent, to be honest, and I couldn't be prouder of them.
Thanks for that brief and that summary, Tony. It's useful, and I think puts into context, as I say, some of the huge challenges that the City Council have had to face. Can I also say, though, that you know, if there has been a criticism of Liverpool in the past, it's that perhaps as an authority, as a city, in fact, we've maybe been a little slow to react to crises and not necessarily being on the front foot. And that's why I really welcome the appointment of Mike Emmerich and Metro Dynamics to lead this recovery plan. And of course, over the past few days, we've heard great news in terms of the investment into the Knowledge Quarter. So that gives us a huge boost for the future in terms of where the city can go and why our ambitions should be remaining high. What other key sectors, Tony, do you think, outside of that obvious science, innovation and health sector, which we'll talk about a little bit more detail later, but where are the other sectors, growth areas that you think we ought to be focusing on at the moment?
Okay, so there's no doubt health is clearly going to be a big area for investment for the government, and we're very well placed on that. But one, you know, it's not just about growth, it's about minimising the damage in some other sectors as well. So the hospitality, visitor economy sector has been absolutely knocked sideways. The chances of getting anywhere near normal levels of international visitors into the city this year, they've gone, quite frankly. And work to support that sector, which will come back, but it's going to take time, is really, really important. Because there's a lot of great businesses there, as you know. There's a lot of really good businesses in the digital and creative sector, I think of the Baltic Triangle and 10 streets emerging and part of the Knowledge Quarter, etc. Some great businesses there. Service-based industries, professional services industries, people are rethinking their business models. And there's a real debate going on about the future of work. Does this mean we're all going to work permanently at home? Well, I bloody hope not. In fact, you can see I'm in the office today. I'm here 3 days a week. I couldn't stick working at home 5 days a week, quite frankly. Much as I love my family, I want to be in the office with colleagues and things like that. And I think there's a real issue at the moment. There's this focus that nothing will ever be the same again. I don't agree with that. I think we will look back on this as a really, really significant issue that we've had to address as a country, globally, really. But it was still a 1 in 100 year incident. The idea that we'll have no more mass gatherings, which means no football or, for me, rugby, forget that. That's not going to happen. That we're not going to go to pubs and clubs and restaurants in numbers, etc. There's going to need to be adaptation in the short term, and we need to support those industries as much as we possibly can. We've got some really strong ideas that are starting to emerge, so some thinking around that about how we can use public spaces to increase the number of covers as people are having to socially distance in restaurants, etc. So if you look at it from a restaurant point of view, where demand is going to be patchy in the early days, capacity is down because of social distancing, fixed costs are the same, and the revenue position has been significantly hit. Unless we can step in and provide some sort of release, a lot of those businesses are going to really struggle. And furlough's great, but furlough's going to come to an end at some point, certainly before demand has kicked in, certainly before social distancing has ended. So while some of those other sectors are really important in terms of growth and material science and stuff like that, great. Let's not forget about that sort of legion of small businesses that has grown our economy over the last few years really, really successfully. And we've got to do as much as we can to help protect the great businesses in that sector. We're not going to be able to flick a switch and sort it, but we can do a lot. And the work we've done in getting £72.5 million of the business grants out to those small businesses, and the lobbying work we're doing on behalf of the Northwest region led by Liverpool, now we're actually leading that initiative nationally to get the government to rethink and give us more discretion for those businesses that have inadvertently missed out from government's point of view. Now, all of this is really important stuff. And for me, that is, saving a business is every bit as important as growing a new business in terms of the economic fight back for the city.
You're absolutely right to highlight the importance of the visitor economy and, of course, the hospitality sector to Liverpool. As you rightly identify there, Tony, they've been an integral part of the city's growth and success in recent times. And, of course, culture and sport are right in the fabric and DNA of Liverpool as well. So, this idea, as you rightly point out, that we're not going to have mass gatherings of the future, and we're not going to be in the streets celebrating the successes of our football teams, hopefully from both sides of the park in the not too distant future. I'm absolutely with you. The sooner we get back to that, the better. But I suppose the other side of that same coin, and you have touched on this a little, is that we've got to maintain some semblance of industry sector in those areas in this difficult period of time. You're working very closely with the Hospitality Association in Liverpool, as we've been, and lobbying national government hard, I know. Any sense that national governments are listening? Because hospitality is a huge industry across the country, not just Liverpool.
Yeah. I think they are listening. We're hoping that we will get a discretionary scheme off the ground in the next few days. We're still waiting for some guidance. At the moment, that doesn't look huge in terms of money. It looks about £6 or £7 million initially. But what we've also done, and we've used some Liverpool case studies in this argument, we've put a dossier to government setting out the reasons why businesses have to be turned down for grant, sometimes because their rate of value was just above the threshold. It was set at 51,000 in the hospitality sector, 15,000 in other sectors is a bit of an arbitrary number. And Now, plus there's also businesses where they don't directly pay business rates because the business rate is rolled up in the rent they pay a landlord, particularly when they just have a suite within the building and they don't pay business rates, so they weren't eligible. So we've gone back to government and say, now, was it your intention for these really good businesses to miss out? And here are some case studies for the types of businesses that are missing out. We think they're good businesses with a future, and that grant is an absolute lifeblood for them getting through this period. So please reconsider. And to be fair to the civil servants, they designed that scheme in a weekend, and they're not pretending they've got it right. I've talked to the civil servants that designed the scheme personally, and they're not pretending they've got it right. All the indications I get from the civil servants is they will look seriously at what we put in front of them. What we're asking them to do is not to take too long over it, because we want to get that money out to businesses as quickly as we possibly can. So as soon as we get the green light, we'll be off. And now we've got a lot of applications in, and we'll communicate with the business community, as we have been doing. And now I completely recognise in this sort of environment, cash is king, and we've got to get that liquidity into our businesses. So we'll do everything we can.
And just to also pick up on a point that you made there in terms of leading the city region response to some of the economic challenges that we're facing. And, you know, I for one, welcome the fact that you're in that seat. Listen, it's been great to see Liverpool and its neighbouring authorities mature in terms of its relationships, and collaboration has been much more positive in recent times. And of course, you know, Joe Anderson was at the forefront of bringing that combined authority to Liverpool and the city region. But the concern, and maybe that's too strong a word, but, you know, concern I have is that because we do have this city region model, and because the combined authority is clearly wanting to be seen to be fair to all the other boroughs in and around our economic region, as I say, my fear would be that we have a bit of a race to the bottom. We start to equalise resources rather than put them into the place that is going to be able to drive economic growth quickly. And for me, Tony, that's still about the city centre. You know, and as much as we've seen success in Liverpool in recent times, there was still a lot to do. And for me, we've still got to prioritise those projects and those initiatives, because that is what's going to drive the economy, not just for Liverpool, but for those neighbouring authorities as well.
Yeah, and look, let's face it, the city region isn't a homogenous place. It exists because there's a city centre at the heart of it. But we also need to recognise as a city that the other places are really important as well, particularly the people that live there and the businesses that work that operate in those places, and that we are overall stronger together than, you know, us pulling in different directions. And I fundamentally believe that. Because I'm leading the overall work at a Merseyside level for recovery. What I've agreed with the combined authority and the LEP and the individual local authorities is that we develop an overarching city region narrative for the recovery, and things like public transport need to be planned at the city region level, doing that at a place level, because buses don't stop at the boundaries between the city and the next boroughs, etc. is really, really important. But that we have an individual place plan, recovery plan, for the city and the individual boroughs within that. And that, to be fair, that is something the business community have pushed me really hard on from a Liverpool perspective. So I got that in there straight away. And in effect, those plans can be aligned and can fit into an overarching document, so that now when we're talking at a city region level with government, we can talk about the overarching narrative and the individual place plans. We can lift those place plans out and present those to government ourselves, which is absolutely our intention to do that on a Liverpool footprint, as you know, Frank. That's the work we're doing with Metro Dynamics. And make a very coherent case. But it's really important that there's sort of complementary working between the different places. And now, whilst a lot of the economic assets are based in the city centre, when you look at Darsbury and Port Sunlight, various other things, there are those assets in other parts of the city region. As I said, we're stronger together than if we operate in isolation. And to be fair to colleagues at the Combined Authority and the Local Enterprise Partnership, they're really comfortable with that approach. Where I've got a call later on this afternoon with the chief executive of the CA, with the lead officer, the MD of the LEP, and one or two others, and we're doing this on a weekly basis, making sure we build that coherence without losing the essence of place, where quite frankly, it's on the front line, but business is on the ground, where the recovery will come from. And in particular, the knowledge-based assets in Liverpool, which will be the most, you know, previous recessions are anything to go by. And I think they do give us a really clear signal of where we need to be. It's those knowledge-based businesses and knowledge-based assets that are most adaptable and agile and can get the recovery moving most quickly. And obviously, you've mentioned it already, Frank, the deal that we got over the line with Bruntwood SciTech, backed by Legal & General last week, for the SciTech deal, which is the collaboration between the City Council and the two universities. Now, Bruntwood investing £3 million and committing to that at a time like this is absolutely fantastic news and a massive boost for the city. And they're doing that because they have got real confidence in what we're doing and see the growth potential in the Knowledge Quarter. And that's something we'll be working really closely with them on. And actually the planning for how we can scale that is already well underway. And it'll form a key part of our economic recovery plan for the city.
Let's stick with the Knowledge Quarter for a moment then, because I think we all see that as a bit of a potential jewel in the crown for the city moving forward in those sectors that we know are going to be vitally important going forward. Listen, they were already important sectors, but now that's been emphasised even more. And then on top of that, I suppose, Tony, in terms of that Knowledge Quarter at work, and again, we've been waiting a long time now, haven't we, for the new hospital. Again, some rumours last week that had been accelerated, that we may be able to get the hospital at least in part operating. But then I know you've got great ambitions for the Knowledge Quarter, and also maybe connecting that part of the city to the rest of the city centre a bit more effectively than is the case at present.
Yeah, look, the hospital fiasco, it sums up quite a lot of what was bad about PFI, and a company that let an awful lot of people down. I have to say, Lang O'Rourke have taken over the building of the hospital. They're also building the Clatter Bridge next door, which is nearly finished. I've been on a tour around the Clatter Bridge with the project director, absolutely brilliant, really high quality, and I think Lang O'Rourke will do a great job for us. What they've pulled out all the stops to open up some capacity in the new hospital to deal with COVID patients, sort of post any emergency treatment that they have, as a step down facility from intensive care, and that in terms of making sure we've got the capacity in the system in Liverpool. That's been really important, and Lang O'Rourke, working with the people at the University Teaching Hospitals Trust, is now called the Royal, as we like to refer to it, it's been a brilliant team effort, quite frankly. I think the timescales for the hospital are still what they were to get that up and running. There were all sorts of structural problems that needed to be addressed and a whole host of contractual issues. Won't bore you with the details, but it was a bloody mess, quite frankly. Let's not beat around the bush on that. But Lang O'Rourke, the hospital led by Steve Warburton, are really working hard on pulling that around. We will get the new hospital. The concentration of health assets in the Knowledge Quarter, together with academia, together with all the commercial investments taking place there, it's that triple helix of academia, business, public sector, together with that intensity of knowledge concentration in that place, particularly with things like the School of Tropical Medicine, our specialisms in infection control, Digitech, etc., sensor technology, that create absolutely massive opportunities. And could I be bold enough and say, if we collaborate with Oxford Road Corridor in Manchester, the two cities working together is world beating, quite frankly, in that space. And when we, Bruntwood do a lot of work in the Oxford Road Corridor, they're key partners in Manchester. And one of the things when we're doing the due diligence work on them, we were testing, is there going to be a conflict here? And quite frankly, 95% of the activity is completely complementary. It's about 5% direct competition. We put Chinese walls in place for that to make sure that doesn't create conflicts. But 95% of it is collaboration. It's a great opportunity for Manchester and Liverpool to work together with us as absolute equal partners in that to drive growth. And you've heard me say before, in front of the Chief Executive of Manchester City Council, Frank, that's an opportunity that we should absolutely grab with both arms, quite frankly.
And the other thing would be exercising your thought process.
Let me just come back to Upper Central, because I think that's what you alluded to. Obviously, things like Paddington Village, we'll get that moving really, really quickly again. And we've got future phases planned of that. And we're working on that today, actually. But Upper Central, which is the area between Lime Street Station, the Adelphi Hotel, up to the universities, that whole area there. And that's land largely owned by the City Council and Liverpool John Moore University. There's some private holding there as well. We see that as a great opportunity to create that link between the Knowledge Quarter and the city centre. And for about 2.5 million square feet of development and about 7,000 knowledge intensive jobs, particularly in digital and creative science-based industries there. And we're exploring how we can fast track the delivery of Upper Central as part of our economic recovery at the moment. Now, there'll be more news to follow on that, but we're determined to get that moving quickly because we think the time is right, and that will be one of our asks of government to help us underpin that financially to enable it to move on a speculative basis as quickly as we possibly can. At the moment, getting pre-lets in place is going to take a bit of time. We'll do it, I've no doubt. What we want to do is get the project, you know, some of the early wins coming out of the ground. So we can really build momentum in the city, and we're really ambitious about doing that.
And as much as that connectivity in the city centre is important, Tony, I know that you're also having conversations with colleagues at Merseyrail, at the bus companies, to improve transport in and out of the city centre and indeed across the city itself. Equally, some big infrastructure projects that we will inevitably be impacted by, not least HS2 Northern Powerhouse Rail, which we're told at the moment the governments are still planning to go ahead with. The one other area of transport I'd like you to comment on, Tony, as well, is the airport, because of course the city has invested in a very real sense as a stakeholder in the airport, and the aviation industry has been absolutely hammered. So let me just get your thoughts on, you know, those infrastructure asks, the importance of those, how you think transport may change in the short to medium term, and then if you would, just a comment about Liverpool Airport as well.
Look, one of the things as we move forward, we need to put the low carbon agenda, the green agenda, at the heart of our recovery plan as well. That's really, really important. And transport is a significant part of that. I'll come on to a couple of other aspects in a second. So I don't think it's going back to exactly where we were before. I think there's a lot more people cycling and walking, which is great. And we need to build on that and encourage that and make it safe and pleasant for people to do that. Public transport's got a really key role to play. Liverpool, of all the core cities, has the highest proportion of people that commute by public transport. It's currently about 24-25%. We'd love to build that even further. The investment in Merseyrail and stuff like that absolutely helps. And when we get the, you know, bus services that we want, and there's work going on with the operators to keep improving there and exploring other options, for the future of bus services, the role of buses is incredibly important, particularly in terms of economic inclusion and connecting to the poorer communities. You've talked about the big national infrastructure projects. It's really important that Liverpool is properly hooked into those. The links to London will always be important, but more important, the links to Manchester and onwards to Leeds, improving those. And given the first commercial railway in the world, the link between Manchester and Liverpool, and I come on that train regularly, not at the moment, but when the crisis is over, I will be doing again. From my family home in York, I've got a place here as well. the service is simply not good enough to link, you know, great cities in the north with potential to drive economic growth. We need to continue to improve that, and Northern Powerhouse Rail linking into High Speed 2 is an important part of that. In terms of the airport, incredibly tough times. We're in touch with John Irvine and the team on a regular basis, and you know, new equity partner has come in there. We sold part of our stake recently at the top of the market, I have to say. It's more luck than judgment because we weren't foreseeing what was coming. And you know, it is incredibly tough. It's going to take some time for that to rebound. But I think the fundamentals of Liverpool as a destination with a genuine global reach in terms of its brand are really, really strong. And I think that market will come back. I also think the potential for international travel with things like the Royal College of Physicians moving into Paddington Village, and now the continuing professional development to be done from Liverpool. So we'll get physicians from all over the world coming regularly to Liverpool. Other things happening in the Knowledge Quarter, the Central Business District, as the economy continues to grow in future years, I think the role of the airport will become more important. Obviously, that has to fit into that low carbon agenda. They, you know, but we're not going to see an end to international travel, quite frankly. It's going to be different. Certainly in the short term, it's going to be different. But I think Liverpool Airport has a great opportunity. And actually, some of our competitors with a lot higher fixed costs will get hit a lot harder. And I think that agility of being a relatively small regional airport, but linked to a city with that global reach, gives Liverpool Airport actually a competitive advantage in that marketplace. And despite the fact it's going to be very, very hard in the next couple of years, we'll continue to work very closely with the airport. And I think there is a strong future for them.
And, you know, you've mentioned the international agenda, Tony. Clearly, Liverpool has been working hard in recent times to put ourselves in the shop window of those international markets for investment. And, you know, our reputation may not have always been fantastic in the UK, but I think internationally, Liverpool has always been a strong brand. And you'll recall a few weeks ago, our biggest headache was whether Mipham, the property festival, was going to go ahead or not. Well, remember the days, I think it was Joanne Roney said to me actually the other day, bring back Brexit, all is forgiven. Well, certainly bring back those conversations.
I'm not saying that.
Bringing back the conversations about Mipham. But equally, Tony, you know, it is important, isn't it, that we maintain those international links, because as you say, you know, the visitor economy aside, those investments that we've got in place and those investments that we want to come to the city, many of them will be inward investment from foreign fields. So we've got to maintain those links, and we've got to, I think, continue to invest in that reputation, that brand, and that marketing collateral that we've been very good at in recent times.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And look, you know, where we can see real growth potential, where Liverpool is strong in research intensive science-based activities, health and life sciences, etc., that's absolutely international. You look at the role of the School of Tropical Medicine and the investments coming from the Gates Foundation, etc., they're operating all over the world. And those links are, and they do testing for pharma companies all over the world and things like that. Those links are really, really important. And having an airport, and it is a, now, the experience is, you know, I'm sure lots of your members have flown more often than me from Liverpool Airport, and the experience is great. Now, you get from the car park through security in 10 minutes on a busy day, and contrast that, now, not knocking other places, contrast that with other airports where it's an absolute bloody nightmare, quite frankly. And, you know, it is a good experience. There's investment to be made in terms of the arrivals experience. The airport know that. That was part of the plan before this hit. But overall, it's a very convenient place to fly from. And you're really quickly into the city afterwards as well. So, now, getting surface links to the airport is really important in terms of long-term to really cement that relationship with the city, and improving those surface links. It's not just the big infrastructure projects, it's making sure we link the economy locally as well is really, really important. But I think that the potential is there for the airport to come through this And it, you know, it's going to take a knock like everywhere is going to. But I think the fundamentals for the long term are good.
Okay. Now, we're told that on Sunday we can expect an announcement about some form of transition and a return to work from the Prime Minister. That will then inevitably land on your desk and to see how cities can begin to operate and work around whatever guidelines are given. Are you being given any steer at the moment, Tony, about what that might look like?
We've got our sources to, which I won't say too much about what's likely to be in the thinking. And I think it's likely to be quite modest to start off with. Until we get testing, contact tracing and tracking really nailed down, and the ability to identify and isolate people who've been in contact with people who are symptomatic, we're not going to be safely able to come out of lockdown. The alternative is to wait for a vaccine to be available to the masses, or antiviral drugs like widely available that work as well. And of course, the danger is a second spike that would just blow investment confidence, because if that happened, I don't see many people investing until they've got confidence the crisis is over. And you know, the credibility of the country to deal with that crisis wouldn't be there if we had a second spike. So that we recognize the testing, contact tracing and tracking is an incredibly important part of this. We're working with partners across Cheshire and Merseyside, experts in the university, etc., to say to government, look, actually we can manage this at a local level and allow us to work with you so we can get a proper grip on this. Doing everything nationally doesn't always work, quite frankly, and we might have seen some of that. I'm not knocking the government, there's been a lot of good things happening, but we've seen some things where it's struggled to nuance things at a local level because it's a one-size-fits-all system. And now, I take the point of view that this is important from a public health point of view, it's equally important from an economic point of view. And in the final analysis, the two things are two sides of the same coin. If we don't get the health outcomes right, we don't get the productivity up in the economy. If we don't get the economy firing properly, we've got a lot more poor people who will get worse health outcomes, and it becomes a vicious circle. So it's really important we get this right. If we can buy our businesses an extra month or 6 weeks of trading and revenue income rather than further, you know, six weeks or a month of relying even further on overdrafts and stuff, then for me, that's gold dust for those businesses. And every week absolutely counts. So anything we can do, like, and, you know, we're pushing this with government. At the very least, we'll try to grip the national system and make sure it makes sense for our places. But we would we think we've got the expertise to lead this at a Merseyside Cheshire level and really make a good fist of it. And at the same time, build the sort of connected, integrated data across health and social care that would allow us to really move forward with our plans to improve health outcomes, as well as creating commercial opportunities in the long run as well. So it's in all of our interest to get that right. Until that is right, I don't think we will see anything approaching full unlocking of the situation. We'll clearly see some movement this week. From my point of view, we're having a debate internally about this, and of course we're talking with trade unions, and this is going to be a phased return to the new normal for the interim period until the crisis is completely over, because we will have to maintain social distancing. But let me be absolutely frank, I'm keen to get as many people back in the city centre safely as possible, because the impact on the city centre economy of that footfall, those people working in the city centre, is incredibly important. We have to do that safely. So we're redesigning workspaces in this building and our other buildings. One of the things that we're doing, I've talked to Merseyrail this week, is we're going to get a survey out to the big employers in the city to get their views, get their thinking, to ask how they can adapt so that we can spread the rush hour and get people in safe. Because if we've got much more limited capacity on public transport, we need to take people in a staggered way so we can safely get more people into the city centre and out of the city centre. And that needs to be a cooperation between business and the public transport system, not just expecting the public transport system to wave a magic wand and suddenly everything's going to be okay. And we want to be on the front foot and positively engage business in that journey and that planning. So you'll see some stuff coming out in the very near future on that.
And Tony, you did touch on earlier the business support packages that the council were obviously responsible for delivering. But of course, the criteria were very much handed down by central government. Now, in the many conversations that we've been having, you've been the first to recognise that some of those businesses have fallen through the support gaps. And you did, as I say, refer briefly earlier to an ask, at least from the city, that we can start to be a bit more flexible in our approach and perhaps be able to help and support some of those businesses. I asked that question particularly, Tony, because I've noticed there are a couple of people who joined us today who absolutely fit into that category. Any signs of progress in terms of that discussion at the moment?
Well, we're very hopeful that we'll get a discretionary scheme, that we'll still have some clear guidance around it. So the parameters will be set by government, but we're hoping that will particularly, so the messages we're getting, I'll particularly focus on those businesses that pay their business rate rolled up in a rent, so they don't have a rate of value for the business premises that they're in. They're part of a bigger building, for example. But we're also pushing hard, and I talked earlier about the lobbying work we've done and the evidence we've put forward to government on those businesses that just come above the what I think are arbitrary rate of value cutoffs, that have excluded some very good businesses that could and should be benefiting from those grants, in my opinion. And certainly the mayor shares that view as well. So we are lobbying hard on that. And hopefully we will get some good news on it. We will certainly keep people posted. I can't promise, it's not within my gift, but we have done everything we can to raise that. We've used some Liverpool businesses as case studies to sort of not just show government the statistics, but show them the types of businesses and the real life experiences that people are having, as well as sort of endorsements about, you know, these are really, really good businesses with a viable future, but they need some support to get over the crisis. So, you know, short of the council having £500 million in unallocated reserves, which absolutely we don't have, where we could set our own fund up. And of course, we're asking the combined authority to vary the SIF money to support businesses. And that is, you know, that's actively being considered. I think we're doing everything we can do at the present time. And we are genuinely listening to businesses. And, you know, like today's event, there's a lot of engagement going on with me personally, but a range of my colleagues as well. And, you know, it's incredibly easy for me to say, because I pick up my salary at the end of the month, but we genuinely do understand what you're going through, and we are here for you as much as we possibly can be. Because when you've put your heart and soul into building a business and you get sort of sideswiped by something like this, quite frankly, it's bloody soul destroying. We absolutely understand that. And we want as many businesses to survive as possible. And that's why when the business grant regime came out, and in the first week, government changed the guidance three times, we got to the Easter weekend and I was really worried. We processed about £7 million of claims, and we trebled the number of staff, asked for volunteers to work over the whole of the Easter weekend, and every single person volunteered and worked all 4 days. And by the Tuesday we came into work, we processed nearly £40 million worth of claims. And that money was in bank accounts by the end of that week, well in front of April payroll, which the business had told us was absolutely critical. So we responded to that. And we saw that more of an exercise, not about the efficacy of grant administration, but of getting cash flow into those businesses as quick as we possibly could. And I think we responded to that very positively. Not saying it was perfect, because it never is, and there's always lessons to learn. But hopefully that was a signal that this is just not words, but it was backed up by actions that the council is taking business support really seriously, because we are doing.
Absolutely. And I can testify to the fact that those conversations are happening on a very regular basis, and the engagement with the business community, I think, has been first class. So again, thanks for that, Tony. Final point from me before I go to some of the questions that we've had on the chat, and also I've had some people text me. It'd be much easier if you did it on the chat. just to go back to that point I made earlier about culture, because culture, as I say, has driven an awful lot of the success that we've had in our city. And again, an initiative that was led by Liverpool and has become a combined authority activity, I suppose, was the International Business Festival. It's slightly changed in terms of its title to the Good Business Festival, which we were hoping to happen in the autumn. Now, we'd already significantly tweaked what that event was going to look like. Is it too early to say whether that might go ahead, Tony?
I think it is too early to say it's going to go ahead. What I can say is a hell of a lot of work going into it. Actually, the City Council is working in partnership with Wayne Hemingway in producing that for the Combined Authority. We won that in competition. We put a proposal into the Combined Authority because our events team, as you all know, are really good and know what they're doing. And so that work is ongoing. The event may change a bit, but I still think there will be something, and I do think the event will happen at some point, and there's a lot of international interest in it, and I think it was an opportunity to refresh the International Business Festival, which had served the city and the region well in the past, but probably needed to be updated a bit. And actually, if it can go ahead in that timescale, post-crisis will make it even more interesting, quite frankly. And making this, for that period, the sort of global central debate about how business is adapting to challenges like pandemic, but also things like climate change, some of the ethical challenges for businesses and stuff like that, supply chain issues, etc. And I think it would make it even more relevant. So I think something will happen in that time frame. Exactly what, it's too early to say, but the full-blown event, I've no doubt, will happen. And I think, from everything I've seen so far, it'll be very successful. And it's a great opportunity to showcase the city and the city region, the businesses that we have here to the outside world, and capture that attention for an extended period of time as well.
Okay. Right, let's go to some of our questions from panelists today, or the audience today, I should say. Tom Horton from Liverpool Echo, who you will know well, I'm sure, Tony. He asks, with more Liverpool Water's plans being unveiled today for a 31-storey tower, how confident are you that these developments such as Liverpool Water's, Bramley Moor Dock and other city schemes will still come off despite the disruption caused by COVID-19?
Look, there's going to be an impact on the development and construction industry. There's absolutely no doubt about that. We only have to go back to 2008 to see that was the case. And now that was an 8% adjustment in the UK's, downward adjustment in the UK's economic output. Now, the sort of optimistic forecasts of this, so there's going to be at least as bad as that, if not worse. So let's not sit here and pretend there's going to be no impact. But the fundamentals in this city are really strong. We were absolutely moving before this, and those fundamentals haven't changed. We've got some real strength in areas that are going to be invested in our view. Bruntwood Legal & General deal just demonstrates that confidence in the city hasn't disappeared. I think the Liverpool Water scheme will continue to move forward. Where things like Upper Central, Paddington Village and Pall Mall, we're really keen to get I'm very confident that the film studio scheme at Littlewoods will still go forwards. Demand for content has gone through the roof while everybody's sat at home chomping on bags of crisps, drinking beer, while I'm out running, trying to keep sane through this process on Netflix and stuff like that. So actually some sectors, demand is going to grow. And actually, when you look at the demand for space, in science-based labs and things in the in Scientech Liverpool Science Park, that's hardly changed at all. And that, those sectors are pretty resilient. Things like the Central Business District, it depends on tenants. It depends on the ability of the council to, and its risk, our risk appetite to use our covenant strength in a small number of cases to get things moving. And in my experience in a recession, we need to step up to the plate, but we need to do that in a way that, doesn't financially jeopardise the council. And we know we're in a tough set of circumstances because of the increased costs and reduced income as a result of the crisis that we're still negotiating and talking to government about. But we do need to step up to the plate with our public sector partners and build that level of investor confidence. But I think the key schemes in the city will go ahead. We're determined to move as many of those forward as quickly as we can, and in some cases accelerate them. And we're determined to give investors and businesses the confidence that Liverpool can rebound quickly and reset quickly and build on those strengths. And that's why we right from the outset of this crisis, we were thinking economic recovery. We didn't let the grass grow under our feet. And we'll have a report going into government in a matter of weeks, setting out a really coherent path. And what we've also done as part of that is we've talked to an institutional funder, and I'm pretty confident they're going to come alongside our plan and give a funder's view of how credible our plans are and what sort of private funding leverage we could achieve with the public money that we're asking to support the plan. And we think that, and we've tested this out with senior civil servants, they've been very, very positive about that. We think that will lend real credibility. This isn't just about a sticky hand going out saying everything's terrible, give us some money. This is about a credible offer from Liverpool to government about what we can do to lead the recovery in our part of the world and actually be one of the leaders of the recovery on behalf of UK PLC as well. And that's a combination of public and private sectors coming together, you know, in a city with ambitions, with really bold leadership, and we recognise that. And, you know, this isn't going to be plain sailing, but that is absolutely what we're about.
This is an interesting question, and one I've not put to previous panellists. I'll put to people in future, though. This is from Julie. Thanks for the positive message today. When we have some lifting of lockdown, will we have teams disinfecting streets / public transport like we've seen in some other cities throughout the world?
Yeah, look, we're part of our planning now is for lockdown to be eased and how we can rebuild confidence for people to come and use the city centre, for people to come into work. Our workspaces, obviously, as a big employer, that's really important to us as well. I want to get our staff back in here, as many people as we can. It's not going to be immediate. And obviously, until the crisis is properly over, we won't be back to anything, any semblance of business as usual, but as many people as we can get back in, I want to get in. We've got to give those staff and the trade unions confidence. We want people shopping as the shops open. We need to give those people confidence. So again, that collaborative work to make sure the city centre feels safe for people, is safe for people, and is seen to be safe for people is really, really important. And you know, I'm not going to get into the detail because I don't have the detail of the teams of people working on this. And I know, now, our colleagues at Liverpool One are thinking very carefully about this as well, how they manage social distancing, how they manage cleansing, etc. And the public transport operators will be doing exactly the same. It's going to be a big team effort to rebuild that confidence, but the sooner we can do it, the better.
Lovely. Tony, I'm conscious of the time. We've a few minutes before we wind up. I just want to say a big thank you for joining us this afternoon. As I say, I think the consistent engagement the city have been having with business has been tremendous. You know, you've been obviously utilising the spare time of an evening to go and clear your head on these 10K runs of yours. And you were saying offline, there's no better city to, particularly in this weather, to enjoy a good run across the water, down the waterfront. It just looks tremendous, doesn't it, that waterfront when the weather's good?
It's one of the most recognisable cityscapes in the world. It's absolutely beautiful. The city's beautiful anyway, and it's full of, you know, just fantastic people who are just inspirational and really, really committed to the place as well. And it is, I've worked in quite a few other places, and Liverpool is a bit of a one-off. On one level, you can say it's a bit nuts, but in a really lovely way. You know, let's be fair, when City won the Premier League last year, you know, they edged it. 75,000 people turned up to their parade, and that was quite, you know, it was quite a big event. 750,000 people. Now, Zurich had 10,000 people for the Giants. We had 1.3 million. That's what I mean, it's nuts. But people just embrace every opportunity in this city. And that's why I've got so much confidence. Scousers are a resilient bunch. I'm still learning about you lot. They're a really resilient bunch. They're optimistic as well. And if this city can't come back from this, no one can, to be honest. And I'm just hugely confident that's exactly what we'll do.
And on that positive note, from a chief executive who's looking as fit as a butcher's dog, I have to say that, thank you for all the positive messages that we've had today from people. Not so much questions, but, so many people coming over, Tony, saying, thanks for the positivity, thanks for the reassurance, thanks for the help in terms of what you're doing for lobbying for businesses. So great to see. And it's been great to have Tony Reeves, Chief Executive of Liverpool City Council, in the Downtown Den.